Hey, this is Gary.
This is Mike.
And Daniel. We're not professionals. We're just three addicts sharing our experiences, strength, and hope regarding recovery.
Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other addicts and to practice these principles in our lives.
Welcome to another episode of the 12th Step Podcast. I'm Mike.
And this is Gary.
And this is Daniel.
Good to be back together again. Yeah. So this episode tonight has to do with we've had a reader or a listener contact us, send in an email. So I'm going to go ahead and read this and get us a starting point. This comes to us from an individual by the name of Mark C. So thank you, Mark C, for writing in. We love to hear from our listeners. Mark says, how do I break the cycle? I don't know to stop. I'm addicted to sex, having pursued sex with both women and men to get relief. I was in a relationship with a woman for 18 years, and she had no idea, as I was able to keep anything physical under control. She was not sex-focused due to multiple reasons, which further complicated matters, and when the relationship ended, I was all over the place. I've been to clubs, erotic massages, bathhouses, and individual meetups. I was and am still heavily into porn, sexting, and ERPG to help alleviate my strong drive. I masturbate several times a week, and I am in an FWB situation, friend with benefit situation with my roommate. I believe my infrequent sex during my relationship jump-started an addiction I don't know how to minimize or control. The few I have talked to about this have told me it doesn't sound like addiction, and I'm just playing the field. It doesn't sound right, and it makes me feel like I'm just going further down the rabbit hole. Mark C. So the general question there from the very beginning, how do I break the cycle?
I mean, for Mark, I would say trust your gut on that one.
Yeah.
If it doesn't sound right or feel right, you're probably right.
So the first thought that came to my mind as we read this email was, alcoholics don't drink because they're thirsty.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that this is a playing the field kind of a situation. It doesn't sound like it, and you don't talk about it like you think it is either.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, I mean, using my own experience. You know, I got divorced. I could have easily jumped into the situation that he's jumped into, but I didn't because I wasn't allowing the addiction to control me. And I think that's kind of what's going on here, even though your friends are right, you're playing the field sort of, but playing the field doesn't mean that you're sleeping with everyone. You're in a friends with benefits relationship with your roommate. You're masturbating multiple times a week, like you're saying, and
engaged in all of these other activities. Engage
all the other activities you are. That's not normal.
So, and you recognize it as a cycle.
Yeah.
That's not nothing. I'm going to go back to my original statement. I don't think an alcoholic drinks because they're thirsty. And I really, really love that statement. I don't think that you're pursuing all of this sexual behavior because you're playing the field or, as you, I think you put it, have a high sexual appetite. Okay. I really think that you're using all of these behaviors to avoid some underlying problems or issues that could be years and years old. And if you're serious about breaking the cycle, I think you need to identify and deal with those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even...
I think it's...
go ahead, Mike.
I think it's... I was going to say the thing that stuck out to my mind was just what Gary hit on right there. For my entire life of addictive behavior, would... as I would think about my behavior and say, is it me? Is it me? Is it my problem? What's going on here? I always came to this notion that I just had an extra high sex drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when he makes that comment that he says I do these things because I have a high sex drive, a high strong drive sort of thing, and I remember thinking to myself, is that really how that works? are there people who are running around the planet right now who just have a stronger sex drive than somebody else? And I think my recovery has taught me the answer to that is no. The reality of it is that we use those words to justify the behavior that we're participating in.
Yeah.
And I think you're right spot on, Gary, in the point that all these activities that we're behaving in right now, by simply identifying as being some sort of a high sex drive that enables us to continue this kind of behavior, because the reality is the behavior participating in is not normal and not healthy. So I think that's a monstrous red flag or a monstrous cornerstone of somebody's addictive behavior is to say that I've got this excessive high sex drive, because I don't believe that exists.
Yeah.
My recovery side tells me that doesn't exist now.
Well, and not only that, you know, he's saying all these things he's been doing afterwards, but if we go further before, he was doing stuff even when he was in a relationship with someone for 18 years. So, I mean, just common sense says all the behaviors afterwards are not anything new. You've been doing this same type of behavior. Maybe it's with different things, but it's still the same behavior that's been going on even prior to the breakup. You know, he's been right with men and women, and the person he was with for 18 years didn't even have any clue of what was going on. You know, and there's a little bit of justification or blaming where, you know, she wasn't as sex focused as he said.
Yeah.
But that could be due to maybe she did know about his behaviors and so she was withdrawn. Or maybe it is something with her, but still, you're running from something.
Oh, well, you know, I was just reading over this again. You know, he says, how do I break the cycle? And we said, good, you know, you recognize that it's a cycle. I do not know how to stop. Mm-hmm. I am addicted to sex.
Yeah.
All right. So
he knows.
He knows. He's, you know, and that sounds like unmanageability to me.
Yeah.
And powerlessness. All right.
Powerlessness, yeah. Absolutely.
And then he goes through, then he lists off all of these behaviors. And then, you know, we've all come back to this part where, you know, to alleviate, let's see, what are his exact words? To alleviate this unusually high drive, something like that. What was it?
I think the other piece that he illuminates right here that really resonated with me is this idea that the person I'm with doesn't have the sort of sex drive that I do.
Yeah.
And I, again, that is the world I lived in for so long.
Oh yeah, me too.
This constant evaluation of my partner and saying, you know, well, she just simply doesn't like sex. I remember coming to the conclusion that, and literally told those around me when I was finally walking through this, that my wife would thank me for having sex with other women just so that she wouldn't have to give it to me as much as I wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, it's this constant evaluation. And that's how jacked up we get with this sort of disease, right? This idea, notion that she doesn't want it as much as I think she should, and I have this over this larger than normal drive that most people just couldn't possibly understand. That's me. That's the world I live in. It's that that terminal. What do we call that? Terminal. What's the thinking error with that? Terminal. Help me here. Uniqueness,
terminally uniqueness. Yeah.
So, I'm completely unique, like everybody else, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think the issue in this particular case is he's spotting it. He may not necessarily want to recognize it, but he's clearly spotting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think the direction I'd like to go with this conversation now is some ideas on how he can break the cycle, because he clearly has some things he wants to work through.
Well, definitely with breaking it, there's got to be a change in the behaviors.
Well, that's where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Okay. He, you know, he lists off all of these behaviors and says, I'm doing it to alleviate this unusually high drive. When I was engaged in all of my behaviors, it was because I was trying to escape other things. And, you know, I'll go back to my alcoholics don't drink because they're thirsty.
Yeah.
I wasn't acting out this way because I had an unusually high sex drive.
Yeah.
the drive was to escape the pain or or the trauma or you know, whatever it was I was trying to deal with in life. It'd become a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that I had this inordinately high sex drive. I had a drive to use sex to alleviate all of these other problems.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that led to a lot of confusion, particularly with my wife and things like that, because I couldn't understand, well, why don't you like sex as much as I do? The reality of it was, is that she wasn't using it to try to solve every problem in her world.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't look at it the way that I did. She didn't think about it the way that I did. She wasn't using it the way that I was, you know, and I was the one with the issue.
Yeah.
You know, so how do we break this cycle? Okay. First of all, he's named himself an addict, you know, and he says, I've talked to a few about this and they've told me it doesn't sound like an addiction. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And you know it. So let's call a spade and deep down, you already know it because three times in this email, that's you name it yourself. And you've also admitted to at least twice that you don't have control or don't know how to minimize or gain control. So yeah, you need to identify the whys. Why are you using sex to deal with everything? You know, what and you're going to need, you know, I'm going to go right back to, you're going to need to get a really healthy support group. You're going to need to get into a therapist and you're going to have to break down a CSAT trained therapist. You're going to have to break down your life. And you're going to have to find out what these origin things are and how you taught yourself to use sex as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And
maybe even because he's out of a relationship, it might be a good idea to detox a little bit, not engage in those behaviors so that he can allow some of that stuff to surface. You know, that may be something that the therapist will suggest. But he definitely needs to see a therapist. Yeah.
I think it's interesting you bring that up because one of the things that popped into my mind when I first read this here a couple of weeks ago when we first got it was it would be very good for 90-day abstinence reset kind of a thing because he has an awful lot going on that he's not been able to resolve. And I would be stunned if a therapist didn't suggest something like that. Your body literally is in this state of heightened activity.
Yeah.
And in order to get it back to a level of normalcy is going to require some abstinence. It's going to require some sort of a break.
You need some clean time.
And he's going to need some serious clean time. And that's right. And so, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mike. I was just going to say, and in the beginning, it's going to be hard. It's going to be very, very difficult. So a lot of times in the beginning, they'll tell you to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, that means a recovery meeting every night.
And that's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
In fact, it may also be in-house counseling instead of, it may literally be, go to a center and turn yourself in and be there in their facility.
When,
that may be part of that as well.
When I got out of the hospital and I started my recovery, I was seeing my therapist twice a week. In addition to that, I had group therapy once a week. I went to two 12-step meetings and met with my ecclesiastical leader, and that was my week. I had some kind of direct recovery work, check in with somebody every day, and I want to say that lasted for the first 3 to 6 months. I was the first 3 months for sure. I was at that intense level, and that's what I required to slow that behavior down and get it under control. And you know, and at the time, I had a lot of motivation. I really hit rock bottom and was willing to do whatever it took. So while I was still motivated by that, but that's the level that I had to commit to.
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning for me, I was doing two individuals and two groups a week and 12-step. So, I mean, 5 out of the 7 days.
Yeah, and then we were talking quite a bit.
Yeah, we were talking often.
I don't think that there was There may have been a couple stretches there where it was every other day, but you and I were talking
a lot. Yeah. But I mean, I jumped into the pool head on because I knew I needed that, because just kind of tiptoeing around it didn't help. Mm. You have to kind of do something intense. You have to have, just as intense as his addiction is right now, he needs to do something just as intense in the opposite direction.
Agreed.
That will help break that cycle.
That's fascinating. I was just thinking of my own experience, because I think mine related very much to what Daniel was talking about. I think I was in a 12-step, one or two 12-step programs, my own sessions at least twice a week, and then also the group meetings that were happening once or twice a week. I mean, it was almost every night for a long period of time. So it's hard to remember all of that, but thinking back on that, I remember how intense it was.
Yeah, and you and then, I talked a lot, and I know that
there was
a lot going on.
Yeah, you had a sponsor in the middle of all of that, and the check-ins, that added a whole new dimension to it as well.
So yeah, I'm going to say you find 90 meetings to go to in 90 days, or you find some way to check in so that you're doing something actively every day to break this cycle. I don't know if you have a CSAT therapist, or that you have the option of group therapy, but start finding that in the meantime. Find yourself an addiction recovery meeting and go to it. In fact, I would even say going to any 12-step meeting is better than nothing.
Yeah.
But I know that between the internet and the resources that are available now, there's something going on every day.
Yeah.
And you'll have multiple options, mornings, evenings.
And definitely start implementing first-order changes in your life.
What do we mean by first-order changes, Daniel?
Well, I mean, changing physical things around you. I mean, if you're taking your phone or tablet or some sort of device into the bathroom, stop doing that. You know, don't have your phone on you all the time. That's something that's changed in my life. I used to have it on me all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's on a counter or on a table. It's not in my pocket all the time when I'm at home.
I'm going to just guess, based on the words that Mark is saying here, that he's probably a contemporary addict.
Sure.
Meaning newer to this game kind of a thing, which means that his access to the internet and probably his porn activity is probably coming through his phone. So one of the first things he wants to do is to block off the internet off of his phone or some of the some of the apps that provide that sort of stuff. I'm just guessing, but that step alone would knock out a large portion of his accessibility to the internet.
I don't know if he's a contemporary much, because he stated he was in a relationship with a woman for 18 years.
Well, that's true.
That does take a chunk of time. I mean,
it depends on what you mean by contemporary, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that in recovery circles, in the therapy kind of circles, they kind of distinguish contemporary addicts and, like, what is it, the other one, traditional?
Yeah, traditional, and those are ones
kind of based on accessibility to the internet and stuff.
Yeah, and also if there's trauma or not. And contemporary generally doesn't have the trauma portion.
Mark, I'll give you some examples of first order change. So first order change, like Daniel said, you are changing your physical environment. Either you are removing yourself from the situation, or you're removing things out of your vicinity. And when I started, I had to get rid of my computer. I switched to a flip phone that had no internet capability at all. That might not be an option now. I had to give mine up because they didn't support the technology anymore. But they have phones out there that you can do that with. And that might sound extreme, you know. But that's what it took.
Yeah.
That's what it took. And I had to... Oh my goodness. I gave every password I had to somebody else. I had no passwords.
And most smartphones nowadays even have an ability to block all that off.
Yeah.
And then someone can put in a password and they control that.
Somebody else have the password.
You can't have the password if you have that. I hate to say this, but your willpower is not strong enough. You will change it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of great security features that can block those things off now with the smartphones. They didn't used to be there years ago, but they are there now. But you do have to have something.
Yeah, and all of this is kind of a preliminary steps as you get into the work. You're going to have to, all of these first order changes are great and are going to get you started, but you have to start working through the whys that are underneath everything so that you can change your thinking, which is a second order change. And that takes time. So
he's going to need some accountability as well.
Yeah.
This attending clubs and erotic massages and bathhouses and things like that. Those are all, I'm doing this simply because I'm accountable to no one.
Sure.
And so, finding an accountability partner of some level, a friend, a sponsor, a mentor. Yeah. Both of those I think would be a great place to start. Get involved with a 12-step program such that, and find a sponsor immediately. That's something he's going to need right away.
I'm also going to say that the people that you're talking to right now that are telling you that it sounds like it's playing the field are probably not qualified to.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not. I mean, they're your friends.
They played their hand, it's obvious.
Yeah, I mean, they're your friends, I get it, but they're probably not the best people to be getting advice from or following.
For recovery.
Yeah. Because you've already identified you have a problem. You don't need more people saying, oh, it's not a problem. Yeah. Because you're just going to go further down the rabbit hole. You want to climb out of it. So, you know, you need to judge if those are people that are going to be behind you and in your corner, or if they're people that you're going to need to let go.
Yeah.
Sadly.
I could do a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think that's a great point. You know, it could be these people that he's attending these events with are those he considers to be friends. And part of making a serious commitment, reality at all costs kind of a thing, may be an evaluation of those friends. Mm-hmm. Are these friends the ones that I invite over to participate in these kinds of activities with? Are they the ones encouraging you to go to the club, the massage parlors or whatever, and think that sort of stuff's okay? You know, it's a complete evaluation of every aspect of your life, and getting rid of the influences that are affecting you in that way, and finding new influences that promote healthy life, healthy living, and healthy choices.
And the other thing I'm going to suggest, you might have to move out of your apartment.
That was the next thing.
Because if you have a friends with benefit situation with your roommate, it's either you need to move into a relationship.
Yep.
Where there is boundaries and structure, or you got to move or ask them to move, depending on who's on the lease.
That's not going to be, that's a poor medium to long-term strategy. That's not going to work.
Yeah, no. I mean, you might as well, if you're an alcoholic, you might as well fill the room full of bottles of alcohol. It's just danger. You're playing with fire there.
Wow.
Mark, I hope you're not feeling like we beat you up. We're being real with you.
We're being real.
And we've all been there.
We've
all been there. I mean, you list off all of these activities and all of the things that you've been into and that kind of stuff. And, you know, we've been in very similar situations or know people that have been in the exact same situation. And this is something that you can come back from. But you've got to... In order to do something that you've never done, you have to do something that you've never done. You know, you're gonna have to make some really big changes.
And we've all had someone that's just put us in our place. Like, man, you're in the wrong. Your thinking's wrong. Yeah. Everything's in the wrong. You got to tweak this. So we're just giving two straight.
I'm going to share an insight that was given to me from Gary, which is a sponsor, which I thought was fantastic very early on. Gary, I hope I don't mind if I share this, but
no, go right ahead. I don't even Gary, know what it is. Go ahead.
Gary was self-employed, and I'm self-employed, which creates all kinds of latitude for this kind of behavior to exist. And I remember very early on having a conversation about my situation, what I was involved with, and I remember a comment that you'd made, and just sharing your own story, talking about how you literally walked away from self-employment, which was providing well for your family to move back into the family business in a much more structured environment, which means not only it was a career change, it was less money, it was a variety of different things to put yourself in a safe situation.
It's true.
And I remember you sharing that with me and struggling with that concept, with that idea, thinking, I don't know that I could do that. I don't know that I could terminate employment, self-employment, and move back into a structured space, a structured environment. And as I'm sitting here thinking about, Mark's situation and thinking, there's so many things that are coming out of this email that he's going to need to make some changes to, yeah. Leaving a relationship that he's currently in, all of those sorts of things sounds larger than life.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what he's feeling. I know exactly what he's thinking because of that very feeling, as Gary was explaining to me, that hey, look, you may have to quit your job. You may have to go back into the workforce in an employed situation with a boss and supervision and no more free time and all the things that self-employment provides to be accountable to somebody. And that was really hard for me to. That was a really hard thing for me to think through.
Yeah.
Now it's doable.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I had to go back to a job where I was making less than a third of what I did when I was self-employed, and I essentially went back to my high school job. I went back into the family business, and I'm extremely grateful that they gave me a soft place to land. But I had to be there for like 10 years before I was in a position that I felt like it was safe and wise to move out into the wider world again.
And now look where you're at.
And now look where I'm at. Everything's different. And do you know
it's
what?
My life,
yeah, my life is better than I could have conceived when I was in Mark's situation.
Well, the issue more than anything is going to be really a deep down gut wrenching heart to heart evaluation of what do I need to do to get this under control, and am I willing to make those kind of concessions? And if I am, this idea of reality at all costs, and we start thinking about the cost, sometimes the cost can be pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And in your case, just as you reiterated, I mean, a third of your who could live on a third of their income, and yet that was what you're willing to do to get this under control. So I think that's every addict has to go through that evaluation. There's just simply no way around it.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
What am I willing to do?
Yeah. Well, and do you know what? It's if you stop and think about it, it makes sense that you're going to have to do something. If things are going to be different, they can't be the same.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're willing to do whatever it takes, you have to surrender to the process, and that process is going to take you places where you didn't think you'd ever be or go. And yeah, you might have to literally, well, you're trying to become a new person. So you might have to literally become a new person.
Yeah.
The
road isn't going to be easy. It's going to be difficult. You're going to slip up a little bit here and there. If you can get the right people to be your support system, and you really work this and give it your all, you can't be 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You got to have both feet in, diving into the deep end of the pool. If you can do that and can commit to that, like Gary says, each of us can even say this, our lives are better now than we ever imagined when we were where you're at right now.
That brings me right back to Mike's favorite reading of the Ninth Step Promise. That's very, very real. And the message that I would share with you, Mark, is that it's worth it and that it works.
Yeah. It does. So.
Yeah, I think, adding my own thoughts to even our conversation prior to this podcast start was, here we are better tonight than we were a week ago, and better a week ago than we were a month ago, and all of that sort of, my life literally is better today than I could have comprehended even just as recently as a week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It really is. It just gets better every single day. And recognizing the shackle that I was under for so much of my life, and being able to remove that and move forward is it's just simply empowering.
It just is.
It is.
There's nothing better. There's nothing better than living a clean life. And making decisions about that. My current situation right now is has me traveling around, and I spend a lot of time on the East Coast, and I've furnished an apartment and just recently bought a TV. And all the travel up to this point in time was getting rid of the TV out of the place, and I'm now, you know, I purchased the TV, and I'm setting parameters around that TV of what I will and what I won't do, because I don't want to be drawn in to all the nonsense that's coming through the TV that puts me in a situation that I can't control.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you bring up a hopeful point, though, Mike, is that, you know, there came a point in time where I got my smartphone again. You know, my life had changed, and your life does get better, and things do change, and you get to recover things, and you get to, you know, you're doing, we'll just use you as an example, because you used me as an example earlier. You're getting to do and enjoy things on your travels that even a couple of years ago would have been impossible for you to do, and you're doing it in a healthy way. You know,
right?
That's something that you've got back. That's nice.
But it always comes with a sort of a mindfulness to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
This was an area of problem for me in the past, and so I want to set parameters around it. I want to be careful with it. I don't ever want to be back in that place where, you know, I'm up at 2 or 3 in the morning looking at whatever it is that comes through the screen.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I just don't need that in my life right now. So,
it's like what I like to say. Go ahead, Mike. I'll let you finish.
I was going to say, recognize it for the good things that it can bring into my house. And you know, my wife and I can sit and watch and enjoy a show or something like that. But also recognize it for the damage that it can do as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you can never. Let's see. I got to think I'm going to say this. You have to approach all of these things with a great degree of humility, because quite honestly, this is an enemy that has whooped you many, many times in the past, whooped me many times in the past. So to approach it with any degree of arrogance or I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof is, it's not going to work.
No, it's not.
But once Mark gets healthy and he starts to recognize that the pain and suffering that these things have introduced into his life, he too will want to set parameters around all of that. He won't be glued to his phone, won't be glued to his TV, won't be glued to those sorts of things. He'll have then the ability to say, you know, I know what these things have done to me in the past, and I want to make healthy and wise choices around that.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Well, it's a great conversation, Mark. Thank you for sharing with us, sharing your experience. One of the things I think that's always relevant when we get an email from a listener is it reminds me. Well, there's a couple things. First of all, welcome to the tribe, right?
Yeah.
Welcome to the group of us that are struggling with this particular addiction and this particular behavior, and I hope you find some peace and comfort in knowing that you're not alone, and that there are others out there who are interested in you and interested in your success. That's the first thing. And the second piece of it is I hope you come away with some ideas and some feeling and some sense of I can overcome this. There's a measure of hope that goes along with it as well. I hope that always comes out of our podcast.
Oh, I do
too.
A
measure of hope. That somebody comes away from our podcast thinking to themselves, I can do this, I can overcome that. I mean, if Mike can do it, I can do it, kind of a thing, right? I think that's the second thing. But then the other piece of it is this this realization that every time I hear someone else's experiences, it bolsters my own recovery. And I appreciate people writing in because it helps me rethink my own recovery and say, wow, I can do better here. I can work on that. Or I should be focusing on this, and I can't get casual about anything. And I appreciate that. So thank you, Mark, for sharing your experience.
Mm-hmm. Mark, I have a couple thoughts I want to share. First one is where you are right now, we once were. And where we are now, you can be. This stuff really does work, but you've got to do the work. And you're worth your own best effort. You know, you recognize that you have a problem and you recognize that you need some help. And that goes a long, long way. All right. So I'm going to encourage you. Get some help, get with a good CSAT trained therapist, get to some 12-step meetings and really, really full send this, you know? And it will work for you if you'll do that. It will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll agree with both of you. It's very simple. I mean, I can't add anything more to that than if you do the work, like I said earlier, do the work, dive into the pool head first, commit everything you have to it. It does, with time and effort, does change everything.
Yes, it does. Man, then let us know how you're doing. Let us know how you're doing.
Yeah. Yes.
You can reach back out to
and
us.
Any other of our listeners that have reached out to us, you know, and have told us their stories and asked for advice, please reach out to us. We want to know where you're at and how you're doing. You know, you are on our minds. We often will talk and go, well, I wonder what happened to that person.
Yeah,
we hope you're doing okay. Because we do want to know. We hope that the advice we've given has given you enough information to move forward and dive into your recovery. And we'd love to hear back.
Absolutely. Best of luck to you, Mark. Best of luck to you. With that, this is Mike saying, do the work necessary to find the peace that recovery can bring.
And this is Gary saying, do the next right thing.
And this is Daniel saying, find the humility in your recovery.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find us.
As a fellowship of recovering addicts, Sex Addicts Anonymous offers a message of hope to anyone who suffers from sex addiction. Check out saa-recovery.org.